The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. Mixed with blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar for the perfect balance of sweet, salty, and sour every time. Discover legendary taste with Cayman Jack, America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me as always is a man that bases his nightlife on the old saying, a burrito before beer and you're in the clear. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us on this beautiful Taco Tuesday, here is your captain.
Snoochie Boochies, it's good to be seen and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for telling your mother.
Hi, Mom.
Hi.
Sorry, Mom. Today we are drinking Cross of Gold by Revolution Brewing Company in Chicago, Illinois. Garage grade 4, big fat bottle caps out of 5. This is a lighter beer, perfect for summertime. A crisp golden ale with a delicate hop finish. And they brew this with a little bit of wheat and a tiny bit of honey. So I love that stuff. Great for summertime. Perfect for this hot weather. And this fantastic beer was brought to us by these fantastic people. First up, a big thank you to Allie out in LA. Also in California, we have Julie and Tyson in Napa Valley. They say, keep the California stories coming, and a big thanks for all the research and the quality episodes.
And a big we like your jib to Melinda in Alberta, Canada.
And next, all the way out doing field work in Calcutta, India, we have longtime listener Hillary. So safe travels to you, Hillary.
And last but not least, we have Kristen down in Birmingham, Alabama, who says, thanks to your show, I actually look forward to my morning commute.
Thank you to everybody for filling up the fridge this week. And if you want to buy us a round for next week's show, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
Yeah, I don't think my mother has ever donated to the show. I know she's a part of the fan page, so she reads all the weird comments about the captain.
I don't even think my parents have listened to the show.
I don't think mine have either.
Well, there you go. Ohio parents are very supportive of their children.
All right. If you'd like to support the show, check out our store page. We've got the old episodes. We've got the bonus episodes. The Brick Family Murder episode. If you haven't heard that one, check that one out. Also, we got some t-shirts. Plus, I'm working on some new t-shirts. I got a working on that Team Colonel shirt.
You mean Team Nick?
Well, we'll see what happens when it gets back from the printing press.
All right, Captain, that's enough of the t-shirts, enough of the website. Everybody gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. Saint Michael, the Archangel, defend us in our day of battle. Protect us against the deceit and wickedness of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And you, Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God, banish into hell Satan and all of the evil spirits who roam through the world seeking the ruin of souls. Saint Michael is one of the principal angels. His name was the war cry of the good angels as he led them in the battle fought in heaven against those led by the dragon, who was in fact the devil or Satan. The devil and his followers were defeated, and they were thrown down to earth. According to scripture, Christian tradition gives to Saint Michael four offices: to be the champion of God's people, to fight against Satan, to call away from earth and bring men's souls to judgment, and to rescue the souls of the faithful from the power of the enemy, especially at the hour of death. Tuesday, March 3rd, 1998, Monroe, Wisconsin. Two men, both priests, are driving. It's about 8:30 p.m. Father Alfred Coons, the passenger, is getting a ride home from his longtime friend and pal, Father Fiore. A dusty Wisconsin snow was falling. Fiore and Coons had a 70-mile drive ahead of them, taking them all the way to the tiny town of Dane, Wisconsin. With a population of only about 700 hardworking and God-fearing people, Dane was only a small blip on the big Wisconsin map. It was where Father Alfred Coons had called home for many years. And for many years, he has loved and taken care of the good people of Dane. It was a beautiful night, one of those clear March nights where the snowflakes melt when they touch the pavement. About halfway home, Father Coons became silent, and then he started to clam up. Fiore looked at his friend and said, "Al, you have been a good friend for so many years, and I love you for that." There was a long pause, and Father Coons looked up. There were large tears running down his face, and all he could say was, "I know. I know." Around 10 p.m. that night, the two priests had arrived at St. Michael's Church, the destination for Father Coons. He got out of the car. Father Fiore rolled down the car window and shouted, "Hey Al, make sure you get yourself something to eat." "I will," Coons yelled back, before heading inside and out of the cold. Most likely within an hour or two of arriving home, Father Coons was startled. A noise woke him from his sleep. Someone was in the building. A stranger stepped out of the cold night and into the church and home of Father Coons. But this part of the story is a mystery, because we don't know the stranger's name, and we cannot see the stranger's face. We can only wonder if Father Coons knew the name or recognized the face. Regardless, Father Coons would have greeted the stranger with warmth and kindness. "How may I help you, my child?" But the stranger was not seeking the love of God, the warmth of the church. He only wanted one thing from Father Coons. The stranger would greet Coons with anger, maybe an accusatory question, a death threat, or words of hatred. The stranger rushes the old priest and attacks him. Forced to defend himself, Father Coons fights back as he is being hit repeatedly. After a long struggle, the stranger gets up and he pulls from his coat a knife. Father Coons grabs at the blade with his bare hands, trying to pry the knife from his assailant. Sadly, he is unsuccessful. The stranger put the blade to the side of Coons' neck and slits the throat of the beloved father. The stranger, now covered in blood, injured, and probably cut, stands up. And as he gathers himself, he curses the priest. Then he steps back out into the cold night. Who was this stranger? Was he a mentally ill drifter? Or some sick, twisted Satanist? Or was he someone the priest had trusted? This is True Crime Garage. And this is the case of Father Alfred Coons. On Wednesday, March 4th, 1998, the body of Father Alfred Coons was found at the St. Michael's Church. His body was practically lying at the foot of a beautiful statue of St. Michael the Archangel inside the building. He was found by a school teacher. This is a male teacher at about 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. on that day. This man called 911 to report the findings. When the first responders arrived, the first thing that they saw was all of the blood on the tile floor. Now, Father Alfred Coons was wearing black pants and a white t-shirt, and he was lying in a pool of his own blood. His clothing had been blood-soaked by that point, obviously. The teacher who had found him had quite a bit of blood on his own clothing as well after running over to the body. Father Coons was known as Father Al to most who knew him. Now, as we mentioned at the start of the show, one man who knew Al very well was Father Fiore. The two were together the night before. This would be the night of or the night before Coons' death, depending on how you look at the timeline. Police say because of Fiore dropping Coons off around 10 p.m. that night and the teacher finding the body around 7 a.m. the following morning, that obviously is your window for when the murder occurred. Now, the police may not know for sure, but they have stated that they estimate that the time of death would be closer to 10 p.m. on March 3rd rather than 7 a.m. on March 4th. So Father Fiore and Father Coons, they were together that night. They were in Monroe, Wisconsin. Father Coons and Fiore, well, Captain, they were a lot like us. They had a quote-unquote radio show. They called this our Catholic Hour. And it sounds to me like...
Clever name.
It sounds to me like Coons had done this show for a while, maybe like a year or two.
I thought it was called Catholic Hour Garage.
Peter Kelly, who is a Monroe, Wisconsin attorney, he is the producer of the weekly show, Our Catholic Hour, or Our Catholic Family. On this night, Father Fiore was at the mic in place of Father Coons. The two had been longtime friends, and I believe Fiore had been a guest many times on this show. Mm-hmm. Now, Father Coons was passing the torch and passing the mic to his friend as Father Fiore was taking over the show permanently. I've never heard the show, and no disrespect intended, but I have read that it was a rather dry hour-long show.
So similar to our show.
On occasion, Coons had done some controversial things or antics on the show. I won't go into the details of those because I don't wish to offend anybody listening. As we said after the taping of the show, Fiore drove Coons back to Dane to his church slash home, arriving around 10 p.m. According to the records, Coons spoke to someone on the phone at 10:30 p.m. There the body was found the next morning at 7 a.m. We don't know what happened during those hours, except someone or someones arrived at the church, and there was some kind of fight that led to someone cutting the throat of the good father.
Right.
I'm really curious to know the first thing I was curious about was the lock situation of the building. So let's describe this building real quick. So basically what you have, it's a church. Now, keep in mind, this is a smaller town, but you have a church that also contains within it a Catholic school, as well as a small apartment. It's been referred to as a small apartment where Coons had lived, but they also said that he lived like a pauper, you know, like he lived like a very, very poor man. There was some a famous story done on Alfred Coons after he passed away that was titled Alfred Coons. From rags to rags, you know, this wasn't a rags to riches story. This was a man that lived,
right.
You know, he lived like a poor man because he served his parish, he served his God, and he served the people of his parish and community.
Well, and also the Catholic Family, our garage probably wasn't paying the bills.
Right. Right. So the lock situation, like I said, the thing that I was concerned about with this building, was very simple, and the police cleared this up very quickly with one of the first newspaper articles that came out. They clearly stated the police found the building locked. The entire building was locked. Every door was locked, and there was no sign of forced entry. So, you know, now we have the situation of how did the killer get in? If this, either he had access to the building in some way, or Father Alfred Koons let this person in.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the thing is, 98, right? Mm-hmm. So it could have been like any school or some of these churches where all, you know, you could get out of the building, but getting in, everything was locked.
Right.
So that's what I'm assuming.
I would guess as well, the same thing. Now, here's some background information on our victim. Father Koons was born in Wisconsin in 1930. He grew up in Fenimore. He attended seminary at Joseph Phenom in Worthington, Ohio. Mm-hmm. You and I are big fans of the little town of Worthington.
It's close to us.
Yeah. That's right. He received a doctorate in canon law. He became the pastor of what is described in these newspaper articles as the Tiny Church of St. Michael's. And they list the church parish as consisting of 149 families. It's unclear to me if that was at the time that he became the pastor or if that was at the time of his death.
Well, like you said in the trailer, this is a very small town.
Mm-hmm. So Father Al, I'll try to refer to him as that because that's what his friends called him. I guess the church had burned down at some point. And he had helped rebuild the church.
Mm-hmm.
As we said, you know, the rags to rags story. He took a vow of poverty. He collected no salary. He died with very little money. He, at the time of his death, he had three cars, but these were all like smaller, older, maybe what we would refer to as beaters.
Well, right. Yeah. And they might have been donated by the people of the parish.
Well, he was a very old school kind of dude. He would buy or get these cars. You're right. Some of these may have been donated. And mm-hmm. these are old beat up cars. And sometimes they would barely run or maybe not run at all. But he would fix them up and he would keep them running. And he would give sometimes he would give these cars to the teachers at his school because I believe the teachers made very little money. You know, they made mm-hmm. something like $500 salary a month. You know, so very wow. little money. So he would try to
Are they allowed to do that with minimum wage and things like that?
I don't know how that stuff works.
The church gets around everything.
But he would try to give them little perks or incentives for their work with the church and school.
Well, and he's a little bit of a chef as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was kind of famous for his fish fries. They would do the community and the church would do these fish fries every most on some Friday nights. And Father Koons, along with two other gentlemen, they would do everything. They would fry the fish, the French fries. They would make their own tartar sauce. And even though the town only had about 700 people, sometimes they would get over 1,000 people at these different events.
Mm-hmm.
So this was something that was popular, you know, and he was well known for. People would drive in from out of town to get together with the people and experience these events on
Friday
nights.
Yeah, well, in all fairness, if you're in a town of like 700 people, everything you do is popular.
That's true.
Hey, man, we're going to go watch little Kevin. He learned to tie his shoes. We're going to go watch him. Okay, 700 people show up.
The thing here, Captain, though, is that Father Koons, he remained at his church. He remained at this church at St. Michael's for a long time, all the way up until his death.
How long is that?
It was like, he was there for like 30 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, and the thing here is they say that he, quote-unquote, ran a one-man show. He kept basically no records. He had no calendar or daily planner and rarely kept notes on things concerning his work at the church, this including counseling sessions.
Mm-hmm.
From the get-go, though, we see a problem with the investigation because we know with these murders that a lot of times we got to start looking at the inner circle, you know, the family, the friends, the people that were closest to the victim. Well, immediately the investigators have a problem because we have a guy that has he didn't write anything down. They would have to go to other people to find out what this guy's future plans were. You know, what was his future appointments? Who was he supposed to go see? What was on his his calendar that maybe he only kept in his mind. So this made the investigation more difficult. Plus, they also they're not able to really fully establish things that maybe only Father Al would have known or Father Al would have wrote down regarding his relationships with other people, or especially his work with the church.
Yeah, but how many people write that down? Hey, I do a podcast with Nick. Well, I like Nick. We drink beer together. We have fun. He's very funny.
I appreciate all those nice things.
Off of the mic. When he's not on the podcast, he's very funny.
But the thing here is, Captain, if investigators can find a diary, a calendar, if they have a computer if they have a computer that they can sort through.
Do grown men keep diaries?
I don't. Okay. Some do.
Yeah.
But a lot of people keep a calendar. A lot of people do, sit at a computer for X amount of hours every day. Mm-hmm. These are all things that can help your investigation. He was killed at the age of 67. He was at St. Michael's Church for 31 years. You asked how many years. It was 31 years. And I didn't realize this until we got into looking at this case. You know, mm-hmm. I grew up Catholic. You grew up Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say we were the best of Catholics. You know, we weren't
Dude,
there.
Shut your mouth. I was an altar boy.
No, you weren't.
Yes, I was.
You were?
Yeah, for a while. I was confirmed.
I was confirmed.
What was your confirmation name?
I think we already got into this on a show.
I can't remember what you said. Hans. Was it Hans?
No, it's Isaiah.
Oh.
And you don't remember your name, do you?
No.
See, I remember this.
I was too busy being an altar boy, so.
I didn't realize that it's a very rare thing for a priest to remain at the same church for that many years, for 31 years.
I'm going
to
keep that joke to myself. So both of us were raised Catholic. Neither one of us are practicing Catholics today. I think we mainly... We were confirmed Catholic just so we could play on the football team.
Hey, I pray a lot during the football season.
Yes, yeah.
Now, Father Al was not only just a good priest, but he was a good son as well. His mother lived about an hour and a half away from him, and he would visit her often, almost every week, sometimes more than once a week. The thing here is that
I heard she did his laundry.
The thing that I thought was really nice and almost cute in a way, in a mama's boy kind of way, he would visit her obviously on her birthday, but he would call mass at her local church on her birthday. So she would go there, you know, and maybe drag a couple of her friends with her so she could show off how proud she is of her boy.
Right.
And like we said, he was old school. One thing that he would do is he could say a Latin mass, which I don't know how often. I don't know if these were things that took place often, a Latin mass. I don't know if they did that at my church growing up. I wouldn't have, I would have recognized that it's a different language, but I wouldn't have known anything that was being said.
Well, they did it at mine, but to be fair, I mean, they start talking and you don't know if they're just saying gibberish or if they're speaking Latin, so...
I do like when the priest like sings and talks at the same time. You know, that kind of inspired me.
I was trying to pull a Frank Sinatra. All right, so this guy was a good guy. I'll post a picture of Coons on Instagram. One of the things that is interesting, he kind of has a it's not a lazy eye, but it's kind of a droopy eye.
Really? I think, are you certain? He might. I just thought he was kind of the dude that, like, if he knew he was having his picture taken, he would, like, cock the one eyebrow up. Like maybe that was his pose kind of thing that he liked to go to.
That's my pose, and you don't get a droopy eye.
Okay.
That's a different look. It's just kind of a droopy eye. I mean, he just comes across as goofy, maybe even a hint drunk. I'm not saying he was an alcoholic or that he was a drunk. That's just kind of...
Because he's got a happy face.
Like,
that's the best way to explain it.
Friendly.
He has a natural smile.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, if you see him out of his priest getup, He's very grandfatherly looking. You know what I mean? He looks like what you would close your eyes and picture a typical grandfather.
Yeah, and I'll post a picture of his when he first started the priesthood. You know, handsome gentleman. But I think then as he got older, I like the guys that as they get older, they embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just go, I'm the goofy older guy now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not trying to be handsome or suave.
Mm-hmm. Captain, we have to go through the autopsy, the evidence, and the police findings from the immediate get-go. One of the first articles that came out, you know, we had a situation where the police were saying that they were looking for a motive for this crime, because it's very rare for a priest to be killed, and a priest to be killed inside one's own church. Now they did state that they would not rule out robbery early on in the investigation. I do want to tip, you know, mention one kind of thing that I thought was a little bit sad. To see a man that gave so much of his life to the Catholic Church and to
his community
mm-hmm. and helping others. The thing here is the priest could not complete the last rites for Father Coons because of the investigation. A reverend from a nearby town of Lodi gave Coons final absolution, but officials did not permit him to anoint the body with oil. As the oil, it was said that the oil may interfere with evidence or things that they were looking for on the body. So I found that to be rather sad concerning that, you know, considering that he gave so much of his life to the faith.
We'll get back to the case of Father Alfred Coons after this quick beer break.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, I highly recommend that you give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. This show is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. Check out BetterHelp.com/garage today.
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, protein plus, and keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. Crush your wellness goals this May with dietitian-approved meals and ingredients that you can trust. Make your day delicious, from breakfast to dessert. Stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. Treat yourself to restaurant-quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon. I am new to Factor, and I have been loving every minute of it. I have a problem, and it's called lunch. Some days I need a pack of lunch, and some days I work from home. Whether I'm at home or whether I'm on the go, Factor is fueling my lunch from now on. Head to factormeals.com/truecrimegarage50 and use code truecrimegarage50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. That's code truecrimegarage50 at factormeals.com/truecrimegarage50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
All right, we're back. Cheers, everybody.
With any open investigation, you want to try to go through the autopsy, the evidence, and police findings. With this still being unsolved, these are limited to the public, as they should be. But the still unsolved murder investigation regarding Alfred Koons has been described as one of the most expensive and time-consuming investigations in the Dane County history. The crime scene was described as grisly and gruesome, which mm-hmm. we should expect it to be, with the cause of death being, well, Father Koons had bled to death. Mm-hmm. He was discovered face down in a pool of his own blood. His throat had been cut. He was lying in the hallway area, what's been described as the hallway area, near the door of his apartment to his living quarters.
Right.
Someone had used a razor sharp, what's been described by the police as a razor sharp blade, to cut the artery. This is just below Koons's jaw. Medical experts said that he would have fainted when the cut was made, and he would have only lived for about a minute, and this would have been in a dazed, dreamlike state. Now, one big indicator to the investigators was Father Koons had marks on his hands and arms. Mm-hmm. It was very obvious to the police, and they're not very descriptive about these, what led them to believe this, but they state that they know for a fact Koons fought his attacker.
Right. That'd be the marks on your hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're also saying that the attacker would have had obvious signs of injury, meaning that the investigators believe or have evidence to point them in the direction of believing that this person was probably punched in the face is the best way that I can gather from this, because they've repeatedly said the attacker would have had obvious injuries.
Well, and maybe they can tell. I mean, you're going to have cuts on Father Koons' hands, but as far as, like, you know, the human hand is not designed to punch things well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a possibility that Father Koons had, like, a broken pinky knuckle or something like that. So if he's punching somebody, he might have damage to his hand from punching somebody.
And
maybe that's the evidence of that.
And you would expect to see more damage to one's hands if they're connecting with the face or the skull, mm-hmm. Because the bones are, you know, right up there.
Well, and the skull is harder than the hand.
Mm-hmm. And so this person would have had obvious injuries on their face from being punched. The other thing that they believe, too, that it's very likely that the killer did not anticipate that amount of blood. Remember, we've talked about in the past that sometimes when there's a struggle or when there's blood involved, the blade can become slippery.
Yes.
you can cut yourself on accident, or it could be even leave yourself with a decent size cut or cuts because of the struggle or because of the blood.
Well, and we've talked about that before with you, if you have a blade, like a, you know, a knife, right? Mm-hmm. You have a standard knife, but it normally has the handle and it has like a, almost like a hand stopper.
A hilt. What I believe they call
so
it.
So when it got slippery, that hilt would stop you from mm-hmm. cutting your hand. Now, if you have a box cutter or a kitchen knife.
Yeah.
Or
like a razor blade type thing.
Razor blade. Then there's no hilt there. So it doesn't stop your hand from sliding. And you want to talk about a devastating cut. Mm-hmm. You know, you thought a paper cut was bad.
Now, right away in the investigation, Captain, one thing that I found interesting was the deputies were asking neighbors, you know, people that lived in this rural community, to watch for unusual items on their lawns. And the investigator stating, anytime that you have a crime like this, there is always the possibility that someone has discarded something as they left the crime scene.
So I'm assuming that they were hopeful, the police were hopeful that maybe that the attacker leaves the church as he's walking back wherever he's going, he's dropping the murder weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that he would have disposed of the murder weapon by just tossing it in some random location.
All right, so what we do know, let's just recap this real quick. We know that Father Coons was attacked and murdered in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there was a knife or a blade involved.
Correct.
We know that there was a lot of blood, so the attacker would probably have blood on them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some evidence. We don't know what the evidence is, but, you know, possibly where this the attacker would have, or the murderer is what I probably should say, the murderer would have blood on him, maybe a black eye, maybe cuts on them.
Correct. Broken nose, you know, mm-hmm. anything that you would, a busted lip, anything that you would assume or you know, that would be typical of a fist fight.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that Coons was killed between the hours of 10:30 p.m. and 7 a.m.,
pretty long window, though.
Police believing that it's closer to that 10:30 p.m. Situation. I was curious to know who he was talking to. I couldn't locate that information, but it was clear there was some kind of phone call that he had, phone conversation that he had around that 10:30 time.
Yeah, like you said before, a lot of this evidence is kind of held close to the vest.
And the other thing too, regarding the teacher that found Father Coons,
mm-hmm.
which
had a lot of blood on him.
They've not included the name of this person that I could find. And there were many newspaper, internet, and magazine articles regarding this murder. And I couldn't find one that stated that male. It's a male teacher. I couldn't find one that stated the name
mm-hmm.
of him. We do know that the doors were all found locked. There was no sign of forced entry. It was, you know, we said that Father Fiore had that the evening with Father Coons the night before. It was Father Fiore who formally identified the victim
right.
at the scene. Now, one thing I was a little curious about was the Father Fiore situation. You know, he's handing, you know, he's taking over this radio show. Was that some kind of problem between the two of them? They were longtime friends. They actually worked together on many projects that they created themselves. And it had been reported many, many times. You know, we talked about Coons purchasing or getting these vehicles and fixing them up. At the time of his death, he had three cars. And he was somebody that everybody said, well, he loved to drive. Like that was a big hobby of his. And I thought, well, if he loved to drive so much, why is he car, you know, why is this Father Fiore driving him 70 miles both ways? I actually found Father Fiore at the time lived only about 5 minutes away from Father Coon. So it would only make sense for the two to carpool on this
Mr.
Long
Don't
distance.
Litter. How about trying to carpool every now and then?
Everybody please carpool.
Be good, be kind, don't litter, carpool.
Now, from an outsider looking in, at first glance, and I hate
we getting into speculation already?
Yeah, we're going to get into a little speculation, and then we'll get into some theories. But one thing that I kind of want to put...
Well, let me just give our warning. If you don't like speculation, turn the damn show off.
One thing I want to kind of put to bed before we get into the theories here, Captain, was from somebody looking from the outside, looking in, your immediate thought would be a priest killed in a church. Well, was he up to no good? We know that the Catholic Church has got some black eyes over the years, and priests have...
We don't have to pussyfoot around with this.
Priests out there that have done terrible things.
There's hundreds and hundreds of priests that were child molesters that are probably still are child molesters. And the church has covered that up time and time again. That's what's been happening. If you don't like what I just stated, that's not my opinion. That's just what's fact.
That's the unfortunate truth. The thing here is, Captain, so the first thing that we looked at was, well, was Father Coons one of these bad priests? Was he a bad priest and somebody out there felt that he deserved to be punished?
Right, maybe. So the idea, which I don't know why you're, dancing around it. The idea is that he possibly molested a child, and then that child would come back, or the parents of that child were like, yeah, it's time for you to die. Pay for what you did.
The thing here is, though, Captain...
That's the theory.
Right. That would be the first thought. And the thing is, though, there's no evidence or even complaints of Father Coons having been involved in anything of that nature.
No, again, and again, 30 years, 31 years at the same parish. Now, when you look into a lot of these, the accused priest, that's all you can call them because there's never charges normally brought up. The accused priest, normally they'll bounce them around. They'll give them 6 months sick leave. They'll move them parish normally every 2 to 3 years. So there is no sign of that. There's no sign of him being moved around.
No, like, Father Al's at the same location for 31 years.
Right, and like we said, there was no, even after his death, there was nobody that came forward.
Right.
So it is a small community. And I think with the small community, you're going to, if he was up to no good, you're affecting a giant percentage of that population.
Actually, the other thing too, Captain, is what came out after his death were there were many priests that were coming out, as well as people within the parish that were, devout and very close to Father Al, that were coming out after his death and saying quite the contrary, that Father Al was not a bad priest. He wasn't a child molester. He was actually kind of policing other priests, that he was what they called a discreet whistleblower. This was, like I said, several priests said this and several people in the parish had said that he was keeping an eye on some things. And he was, I don't know how vocal he was with it because, like I said, this is stuff that came out after his death. It sounds more to me like he would report these incidents or report his suspicions to superiors, to these other priests' superiors.
Right, and like we said again, this was 1998. This is actually 3 years, I think, before the Boston story broke. 2001, with the whole priest sex scandal in Boston. But I think this was something in that community that was being talked about and being discussed. And from what I found, it seems like he was doing a lot of research into these possible connections with priests in the whole state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So what did he know or what did he uncover? You know, could that be a possible motive?
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing here is, Captain, early in the investigation, we have Dane County Sheriff's Detective Kevin Hughes. Regarding the thought of motives for the murder of Father Coons, he says, you know, the motives are all over the place. You know, this could be anything from jealousy to power and control to betrayal and fear of exposure. He basically says, you know, it could be any one of these things. So you can take your pick at this point when you're investigating this crime. Now, very early on in the murder, they had a whole bunch of guys, maybe 30 men and women investigating this murder. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of hard work on this. Now, there were many theories out there regarding the motives or why he was killed, but several priests have theories of their own, and we'll get into those. The first one being that either Satanist, possibly Luciferians, killed Father Al Coons.
Okay.
It's been suggested, many have suggested, that there is a body of evidence that suggests that Satanism was involved in the murder. Now, we gave a warning a couple weeks ago, and we don't typically do these because it is a true crime show, but you don't expect to hear about an animal being harmed or killed. So throwing out, this is the warning. I was actually received some feedback that said, hey, next time when you're going to talk about that stuff, could you make sure you throw out a warning in advance? And I thought, well, you should pay attention because we did give you a warning.
Here's your warning.
This is the official warning. So, and I apologize for this, but it has to be reported. A mutilated calf was discovered on a farm just about 15 minutes away from St. Michael's Church where they found Coons' body. The calf, this was found just the day before.
Mm-hmm.
The calf had its throat slit.
Its throat slit.
And its blood was drained into a milk pail. Mm-hmm. The calf's genitals had been cut off as well. The calf was in a cage when it was killed, or at least fenced in, maybe in a stall rather than a cage. But the articles I read refers to the calf as being caged.
Mm-hmm.
According to police reports, this happened between 10 p.m. on March 2nd and 4 a.m. on March 3rd at a farm. So, again, this is a very similar time frame, just one day before Coons' murder.
Right.
As I said, the caged animal's throat was slit. The farmer told police that he believed that this was probably the work of a Wiccan cult that he had said was rumored to operate in the area. Now, cult experts consider calf mutilations to be the quote-unquote calling card or signature of Satanist. Coons' slit throat was also significant to these same experts.
I wonder if there's a way to test you know, the blade entries and things like that of the bodies, if they'd be similar.
That's an interesting thought. They're saying that the throat cutting is signs of you know, many secret societies. There are oaths of many secret societies that include that throat slicing,
mm-hmm,
as a penalty or punishment for revealing a group's closest secrets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thought here being, was Father Coons exposing the operations of some kind of cult?
Right. But again, like I said, how much did he know about these other priests as far as the, you know, pedophilia and stuff like that? But also, were those priests connected to other organizations,
mm-hmm,
you know, that were more sinister? So that's just a rabbit hole.
Now, one driving force behind this thought of the Satanist or Luciferians was Coons' friend and associate. This is a former Vatican insider, mm-hmm, Malachi Martin. He certainly thought so. And this is obvious because just 6 weeks after Coons' murder, Martin appeared on a radio show claiming to have inside information that Coons' murder was carried out by Luciferians. According
for what reason, though, did he say on the radio show?
I did not hear the entire interview.
Mm-hmm.
According to, you know, this would have taken place in the late 1990s and late 1998. So I was unable to find the entire interview.
Right.
But according to Martin, Luciferians are not your garden variety devil worshippers, but they are devil worshippers nonetheless. He also insisted that Koons had either assisted in several exorcisms,
yeah,
or performed them himself at the St. Michael's Church, and that he often consulted with Martin regarding these exorcisms. He also...
Yeah, well, I think Martin was actually pretty famous for exorcisms, wasn't he? I think that was the priest I was reading about.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Martin was famous for a lot of things, and we'll get into that in just a second. But one more thing that Martin was saying was that Luciferians resent, what they resent the most is interference with someone they regard as their own. Adding that his friend believed that his life was in danger for weeks leading up to his death. He says that I don't know who we are when he says we, but he says we are all convinced beyond anything that Father Koons was killed in hatred of the faith as punishment and as an example for the rest of us.
I'm assuming he means we as in priest. That's what I would assume.
And he also states that a week before the murder, a woman who was certain her middle-aged son was demonically possessed was referred to Father Al Koons for an exorcism. And this was going to be done. He was referred by a bishop in Minnesota. The woman and her son had not yet arrived as of the night before Koons had died. Martin also said Koons was afraid for his life for weeks leading up to the murder. It sounds to me, Captain, like it's a little unclear in my notes, but it sounds to me like this.
Well, maybe get some more clear notes.
This woman had made some kind of appointment meet with him because, you know, it does state that they had not arrived to meet with Koons before his death.
Yeah, but, you know, old Alfred doesn't write anything down, so we don't know.
Right.
It's funny when you're saying he doesn't write anything down. I'm like, well, really, who writes a lot of stuff down? But I guess you would write down appointments
for an exorcism or to discuss an exorcism.
You think if you're going to have a fight with a man possessed by the devil, you're going to mark that down on the calendar. You're going to get up every day and you're going to chug your eggs and you're going to run up the stairs.
My calendar is not very complete, but I would be dreading the arrival of that day.
Next Wednesday, it's on like Donkey Kong.
Well, okay. So should we talk a little bit about, let's talk a little bit about Martin for a second, before we get into, some of these other theories.
Martin is the priest that's giving the interview with the radio.
Yeah. And I don't want to go into this all the way because I don't fully understand it. There's probably a lot of intricate workings with inside the Catholic Church that we are unaware of. But, you know, there have been people that have questioned this Malachi Martin, his authenticity as being a priest, his authenticity as having been a quote-unquote Vatican insider. Okay. We're not going to debate that on this show, but I do want to throw that out there to let you know there has been this talk. You can certainly look into Malachi Martin as much as you want. There's a lot of information out there on him. He was a best-selling author. Apparently, he had asked for special permission from the church to become an author. The thing here is where I think you see the problem with Martin is a lot of his books were talking about Satanism being involved in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, as well as sex scandals and the pedophilia that you had talked about being involved in the church. He had several best-selling books, and maybe that's why the church pushed him away or kept him at arm's length. But as you said, he was known for his exorcisms. He was known to be a big proponent of reminding everybody every chance he got that there is a constant battle between good and evil going on, and there are people out there that are getting possessed by these demons, and he was leading and assisting in many exorcisms and wrote several books, whether, you know, most of them are considered to be fiction, works of fiction, but he says that a lot of his works
are based on reality,
based off of experiences that he had.
Well, but it also kind of makes you wonder, you know, if this guy has connections with the church, what is his motivation? Mm-hmm. I mean, he has some motives here too. I mean, let's just hypothetically, right?
Right.
Hypothetically, Alfred Koons gets some information that there is some, you know, some touchy-touchy going on with some priest, right? Mm-hmm. And he is going to, and maybe he's presented this evidence to some people. I actually heard that he actually sent some stuff to the bishop before. So if they looked into this information that Father Koons gave them, there was some validity to it, and they didn't do anything about it, and then he then contacted them and said, hey, what are you doing about this, right? Mm-hmm. That would be, if, again, connections with the bishop, connections with, you know, the Vatican or whatever, that would be a reason, oh, well, he was killed by Satanists. Well, actually, he was killed by priests, but we're going to call him Satanists, and that's our cover-up. Mm-hmm. You know, he was killed by the church, but hey, guys, he was killed by Satanists. Mm-hmm. So that would be a motive there for him lying. But I don't know.
Well, but the thing here is, I think, you know, I see Malachy Martin as he, you know, and maybe it's not all over the shop, but he seems to be presenting almost two different arguments that kind of, I guess they intertwine each other at some point, because he, you know, he states that, you know, it was known that the format of that hour long radio show, that Catholic Family Hour show, right, was going to be modified. Martin, I guess, was at times a guest, a regular guest on this show, and he was labeled as an expert on deviant sex rings within the Catholic Church, stating that the night Koons was murdered was the exact same night that Koons' friend, Father Charles Fiore, was going to take over the Catholic Family Hour show. Fiore planned, this is according to Martin, Fiore planned to begin exposing satanic pedophile rings within the Catholic Church. Fiore was in a perfect position to collect intelligence on deviant sex rings, both inside and outside the Catholic Church, because of his participation in what Martin says is the, or calls the, Council for National Policy.
Well, so everything I just said makes zero sense then.
Well,
so basically, because then that wouldn't be a cover up, right? Because if he found this bad stuff, then this guy is not covering it up. Mm-hmm. Because what he's stating is, if he was killed and it was satanic, it does not exclude people of the church.
Right.
That there are satanic organizations outside of the church, mm-hmm, and then there's some inside the church. And he was saying that the satanic ring of pedophiles in the church possibly could be who's responsible for killing Father Koons.
Yeah, and I think that's Martin, you know, reminding us is or pointing out to us, asking us the question, is it just coincidence that Koons is killed on the same night that Fiore takes over the radio show, and Fiore's planning on discussing this crazy topic.
Right.
And, you know, was Koons killed to shut up Koons, his work that he was doing behind the scenes, to the reports he were filing with people, and as a warning to Fiore to not go out with this information. Now, according to Martin and to others, Fiore then changed his plans for that radio show after the murder of Koons.
Well,
we can say of course he did, but we also we don't know exactly what his plans were. You know, it's one thing for Martin to say this is what he was planning to do. It's another thing that was actually the case.
Yeah, does anybody write this stuff down?
Yeah, so Martin, I mean, these are interesting theories. Martin is certainly a, and I don't want anybody get mad at me on this. We weren't able to spend a lot of time on this Martin guy. He had a very extensive career. He had a lot of ins and outs with the Catholic Church. I don't know the specifics of all of those, but he was what I would say a controversial character. Martin died in 1999, so not long after the death of Father Alfred Koons. Well, he passed away of a stroke that was prompted by a fall as he prepared for an exorcism. According to a close associate...
That doesn't sound fishy at all.
Well, according to this associate, and this is coming from Martin as he's lying in a hospital bed just shortly before his death, Martin says, and he adamantly says, that the fall felt more like a deliberate act of an unseen evil force than an accident at the time. The associate who was at Martin's bedside when he died later quoted him as shouting at one point when asked about the incident. He says, "No, I did not fall. I tell you, my legs were pulled out from under me."
Right.
So sadly, Martin has passed away in 1999. Now, regarding the calf mutilation, that certainly does seem
Let's not jump around here. So with his stroke, he's stating somebody pulled his legs out from under him.
Well, he says an unseen evil force. He says that it feels like pulled his legs out from him. He's
could have been in person.
Again, he said he was I believe he was reaching for a book. Like he had climbed up on a stool and he was at his one of those, you know, fancy bookshelves that these successful people have. And he was he
I don't have one of those.
Our bookshelves are short.
Yeah, it was
you have to
actually dig to get to ours.
He's standing on a stool. And first of all, any listener out there, even if especially the older crowd, don't stand on stools. Okay, let's not stand. They're not safe to stand on.
Don't litter. Carpool.
Don't stand on stools.
Don't stand on stools.
Okay. And go to the fish fry on Friday.
All right.
Okay, so Martin, he's on this stool, and he says that he felt that his legs were pulled out from underneath of him. He was preparing for an exorcism. I don't know. You know, I watched a documentary on Martin, and a lot of his close people, well, he firmly believed in these demonic possessions. So,
Of course he did. I mean, why would you do exorcists if you didn't?
And if you believe in that, then I guess that it's not too much of a leap to believe that they could be coming after him as he's trying to help these people. The thing here, though, is, you know, close associates of his, according to the documentary I watched, it was called Hostage to the Devil or something like that. They believe that the exorcisms were taking a physical toll on this Malachi Martin throughout his years, that he was having health problems because he was involved in these exorcisms.
Well, I'm assuming an exorcist is kind of stressful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, God, if they're anything like they portrayed in the documentary,
demons.
I don't even
release yourself.
Yeah.
Demons.
Yeah. If you're hosting an exorcism down the street from me, could you make it well known so I can leave the state? I don't want to be anywhere near those things.
You probably have been near one. You just didn't know it. You know,
I've got some family members that I think might need an exorcism.
Oh, Jesus.
So here's the thing, Captain. What are your thoughts on this calf mutilation? I mean, it's certainly an act like that. Killing.
Well, I'm not a vegan.
Killing a younger animal in that manner certainly sounds like something, and I'll use a George W. term here, one of my favorite comic book terms, sounds like something that an evildoer or group of evildoers would perform. It seems like a really unnecessary thing of violence, you know, and that's why the farmer believed it would be an act of some kind of cult.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. One, I would want to know, did the farmer have any exchanges with anybody where maybe he did something wrong, you know? So that's a possibility there. Are they connected? It's very possible. I mean, we have in the same town, very small town, we have a animal with its throat slit, and then we have a priest the next day.
Yeah, roughly 15 miles away from one another, roughly 24 hours apart.
Yeah. Are they connected? Possibly. It could be the same individual. Do I think it that's a sign of it being satanic. I don't believe so. You know, that's all based off your, you know, this case is so difficult because, you know, religion is such a personal thing that, you know, it's like, you know, if somebody said to me, well, this person killed a calf and then it killed a person, and that those acts are satanic, those are acts of the devil. Well, I would agree with you, you know. So does that make it satanic? You see what I'm saying?
Right. And I want to hit on something that you chimed in there about was, you know, did this farmer have any grievances with somebody in the area? Because to me, you know, calf mutilation and calf animal sacrifice sounds, and I hate to, you know, it sounds a little more teenager, you know, a little more teenager satanic cult kind of thing to me. That's where my gut goes with that. Mm-hmm. As far as the mutilation, did this farmer have any problems with somebody? Because, and I hate to use this word when I'm referring to a living animal, but this is how the law would see it. The calf is a form of property of this farmer. And, you know, much like people that dislike one another or have some grievance against one another, might destroy someone's property. Right. Well, somebody destroyed the property, and this being the calf, which could be a valuable piece of property, especially to the farmer.
It's an asset, you know. So I think when you think of it in those terms, yes, it's an asset. And so it'd be like, if you did me wrong or you owed me money and you don't have the money for me to collect, well, I'll hurt you in your wallet by killing this animal. And it's a horrible thing. And it takes a horrible person to do that act.
And I think that the timing of the two are really what have to link them for me. You know, if the calf mutilation was a week before, 3 days before, 10 days before, I might not see any type of connection, but being so close in the manner of death being the same, is disturbing. And it's a real big hiccup in this investigation for me. It's something that,
well, I think the timing, but I also think what's really interesting is the, not just the day, but the hours. Mm-hmm. You know, they claim that the calf killing would happen after 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., correct?
Mm-hmm.
Same with Father Coons's murder. So to me, that's very suspicious.
It's very strange. It's a strange occurrence, and it's something, like I said, it's a hiccup for me. When I look at other things in this case, I come back to that, and I'm going, still a little uncertain on how I feel about if there is a connection between the two. My gut says no, that there's probably not a connection to the two. The investigators at the time say that there is nothing, that they didn't find any type of connection between the two, between the calf and...
Well, again, both, it's being killed by slitting somebody's throat or an animal's throat. And I think the thing here is, as far as satanic, if it's satanic, right?
Mm-hmm.
My thought would just, like I said before, I just, you know, if somebody based off their religious beliefs said, well, murder is satanic or whatever. Okay, fine. That's your viewpoints on this. To me, it could just be some sick individual that got a new knife or whatever, was wandering around town after 10 p.m. when the whole town probably shut down. Back in the day, for all the young listeners, back in the day, towns actually shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could get about 10 p.m., everything got pretty dark. So it could have been just some sick individual that got some knife,
right?
Was walking around by a farm and was like, you know what? I'm going to try to kill something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sick individual. That's a sick piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that same individual could have then been walking by the church, sees the father dropped off, and thinks to himself, well, I killed an animal. Let me see if I can kill a person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people, I mean, we've covered how many cases? There's people out in this world that are that messed up.
Well, there's also people that will take out insurance on, you know, racing horses or different kinds of valuable animals that they have, and then burn down the stall for the insurance money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know this guy's situation or the cow's situation. It's sad for the cow, obviously. But yeah, my gut says that there's probably no connection. Now, the thing here, though, Captain, would you think that if Coons were killed by Satanists or like Martin might suggest, a specific group of Satanists, the Luciferians, is it the same as an act of terrorism? And what I mean by that is because we see, you know, we've unfortunately come accustomed to acts of terrorism in this day and age, and the terrorists are usually pretty quick to claim what they've done. Where with the murder of Father Alfred Coons, does it make you wonder, would they have set up the crime scene in a way that would suggest it was carried out by Satanists? Would there have been some indication of that at the crime scene?
Yeah, but I believe law enforcement probably would have brought that to the forefront or earlier. So I think that's where we got a lot of other stuff that we need to get into. At the end of the day, I don't think, I don't know if it was satanic acts. Like you said, I think that there would be some kind of signature if it was a satanic act. Maybe not the calf murder. Maybe that would just be, you know, we're killing a calf.
Right.
But as far as with the priest, I think there would be some kind of signature that's left to say, hey, this is a satanic cult that's doing this.
Well, we have several different theories and a couple of suspects to discuss still on the board in the garage for this week. We will have to do that on tomorrow's show. So we will see you tomorrow in the garage. We want to thank all of you for listening.
Yes, thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for sharing stuff on social media. I mean, it just helps. I mean, we can't thank you enough for the show blowing up as much as it has.
Thank you, Captain. We will see everybody back here in the garage tomorrow. Until then, be good, be kind, and don't litter.
And make sure you carpool, and make sure you don't stand on stools.
You ever meet someone who seems kind of off? Whether it's a creepy neighbor or random phone number that keeps calling you, Truthfinder has you covered. You can search for people by name, address, phone number, email, and more. Truthfinder can be especially helpful for running confidential background checks on anyone you're planning to meet from online dating apps. Go to truthfinder.com/podcasts for a special offer. That's truthfinder.com/podcasts to access your special offer today.